Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My name is Nima Drabbaby, and I'm delighted to have you join me on this Friday afternoon. Vortex of Truth is a show where we use fiction as a tool to spark empathy and create questions in the minds of our listeners as to what they themselves would do were they in the situations that our characters find themselves in. We also cover stories that should serve as mild warnings or help to explain and allow listeners to understand the struggles that other people go through. Today, we'll be discussing a little niggling voice that sounds in the back of your head from time to time and immediately ruins your day. Dissatisfaction. Dissatisfaction is defined as the state or attitude of not being satisfied. That doesn't seem to mean much. But let's break it down. It's an attitude of not being satisfied or content or pleased. So when you're dissatisfied, you're unhappy, you're unfulfilled, there's something missing. But what causes dissatisfaction? Why do we feel unhappy and unfulfilled? Why do we fall into the attitude of not being satisfied? For the majority of us who aren't struggling with object poverty or similar pressing problem, dissatisfaction is closely related to being unappreciative or ungrateful. It's also intricately intertwined with jealousy. That sounds awful, doesn't it? Someone who's dissatisfied with their lot must be a really nasty person, because they only feel that way due to being jealous of others and ungrateful for what they have. What if I were to say to you that feelings of dissatisfaction are frighteningly common? What if I were to say to you that you've probably been dissatisfied yourself, perhaps without realizing it because you're trying to not pay attention to it or indulge in it? There are people who spend their days trapped in misery because they've become dissatisfied with their own lives and cannot seem to find a way back to being fulfilled and happy, no matter what they do. And then there are the people who don't even bother trying to find happiness and fulfillment anymore because they've come to embrace the feelings that are keeping them from finding freedom. There are people out there who no longer wish to be happy because they've been unhappy and been dissatisfied for so long that they believe life is better that way. The lives we live today breed dissatisfaction. Comparison and competition are everywhere, and though they're not romanticized or glorified as much as they could be, they're still a part of life that we've come to accept. But there's an inherent danger in this kind of life and mindset, and we're going to be exploring that in today's sketches, the first of which is called Yearning. Let's dive into it. Here we go. There's not much to say anymore, really. The days go by, getting harder all the time. Scroll through the world from a phone and see people gleefully showing off their accomplishments. Walk through the world in reality and hear people boasting about those same accomplishments the very same way. Everyone is climbing up, doing well, getting promoted and having rosy cheek babies. Everyone but her. She is still stuck in the slow lane. Poor little Miss Latecomer, not quite there yet, not quite ready to play in the big leagues. It was all too much to bear sometimes. On her dark or weak days, she wondered if there'd ever be a day where she could stop working, look around at all that she'd achieved for herself, and be able to lean back and relax, knowing that she'd done it, knowing that she'd won the whole dang thing. That wasn't really the way it worked, though. Everything was constantly up in the air, and sometimes you were high enough that you could almost see to the top. Wait just a minute to savor it, though, and you'd end up dropped even lower than you were before, as a punishment for taking your eye off the ball. It was a pity that she'd so late in life come to understand the truth, that it did matter. Everything those holier-than-thou pious people said didn't matter at all. It all did matter. Money, class, birth, even the color of your hair, it all mattered. And it could all be an advantage or a disadvantage. You had to be analytical and find a way to make what you had work for you better than the next person was making what they had work for them. Early mornings were for losers. She'd been joking the first time she said that, way back in high school, when she'd been a teenager who would pick extra sleep over styling her hair. She wasn't joking every time she thought it now, as her alarm went off and startled her awake. She started work at 8 on the dot every morning, and the drive always made her irritable. She passed adorable little restaurants and two different parks on her commute, and every day without fail, she felt a twinge of longing as she looked at the many people who got to start their morning with a fun outing instead of the frantic rush that her mornings always were. It was almost habit now for her eyes to land on the happiest of people that she could see, so that she could see exactly what she was missing. It didn't help that she knew people in her very own department who got to start the morning late while she didn't. Apparently, there were extenuating circumstances. Though she knew that all extenuating circumstances meant was that the bosses were ready to look the other way for their favored darlings. It was a sad state of affairs, but no one was going to address it. No one wanted to get called nasty or petty. And the only way to win that particular battle was to become one of the favored darlings so that the unfair treatment was working out in her favor. And she couldn't wait. And that's the end of sketch one. A very unhappy woman with all the wrong priorities who was constantly concerned about other people and what they have, which seems to be better than what she has. As you've heard, our protagonist makes a lot of assumptions in a very short space of time. She assumes that the people who are out having breakfast while she's on her way to work are happier than she is. She assumes that the colleagues who come in late are doing it in order to sleep in and enjoy themselves instead of possibly due to illness or because of some sort of trade-off. Everyone has it better than she does somehow, and it's intolerable for her. This protagonist's life is not that bad. She has a good job. She gets to have a beautiful morning commute, looking at adorable restaurants, and she's doing okay for herself, really. She doesn't have any problems that are so bad that she focuses on them, but still, she's so miserable because she thinks that everybody else has it better. And she has no way of knowing that they truly do have it better. Still, though, she's focused only on what she can see that seems to be good, and chooses to compare herself to that. And she's completely dissatisfied with what she has. She can't think of the fact that her job is good enough for her to be able to get promoted eventually. She doesn't think that anything in her life is really good. In the entire sketch, she didn't mention one thing that she was happy about for herself. How very sad. Now, we're going to revisit a sketch from a previous episode. This one is called Stretched Thin, and we first used it to look at the dangers of overworking. Now, let's look at it with a different lens, looking at the emotional state of the protagonist and how he generally feels towards others and with and about his life and circumstances. Here we go. It's dark outside. Has been for a while now. Once upon a time, looking up and seeing that the moon had risen would have given him a jolt, made him curse his boss for offloading so much work onto him that he was working from sunup to past sundown. Now, though, he doesn't spare the energy to get angry. A few more years and he'll be working reasonable hours. He knows this. It's what gets him through the huffing from his mother and wife and the complaints of friends who think that he's decided he's too good for them because of the huge place that he's working. None of them understand that he's not just being neglectful. They don't understand that they just need to be patient with him for a while longer, and then he'll have balanced out. They'll have more than enough time to spend with them if they could just wait. It's not that much of him to expect from them, especially when they know he can't exactly ask his bosses to just wait for him instead. They're his family, his friends. They're supposed to understand and support him. He puts a hand to his aching eyes and sighs. Maybe he is letting the long nights get to him. He had thought that he made his peace with the realities of his situation. And he knows now that it will do no good to get angry about it. But he is angry. He still is. he's tried to explain, and they're just not getting it. There's no hope for it but to just keep going and hope that in the end they'll get it. They'll see that he was right to make these sacrifices when they're all paying off. Early retirement, trips overseas, all the things that his parents hadn't been able to accomplish themselves, that he refuses to let slip through his fingers. With all that on the line, what was a few late nights in comparison? He turns back to his laptop. It will all pay off in the end. And how? Another late night at the office, and he's not even going to bother texting his wife Asia to let her know what time he'll be home. She knows where he is, and she knows that he'll get there when he gets there. She's unhappy about the hours he's putting in, but they've agreed that it's not something they're going to keep discussing. He won't give in. And she isn't making her peace with it any easier by him reminding her that he won't give in. So they avoid the topic. She makes plans with her sisters or her friends in the evenings, and they keep her company. Sometimes, if he's working particularly late, she'll have fallen asleep by the time he gets back. In the early days of their marriage, she used to stay up and wait for him. But lately, she's just been leaving notes in the kitchen to greet him. And she's such a heavy sleeper that she doesn't even stir when he gets into bed beside her. It's almost like they're not even in the same room. He works until 10 and briefly considers staying later to keep going. There's more than enough work to keep him busy right through till the morning. But no, he needs to sleep or he'll be useless, and the point of all of this is not to put in the hours and turn in sloppy work. It's to put in the hours and wow them. No, he'll start again in the morning. He gets stuck early this night. He can't keep going without input from his supervisor, and the man's been off duty for 6 hours now. There won't be any reaching him at home, nor is it possible to just keep going. He'll need to pick everything up again in the morning. For once, he's not too upset at the lost productivity. Instead, he thinks of Asia. It's only just past 8. She'll be awake still. They can go out, make a date night of it. Even if she's already eaten, he thinks they can probably figure out how to do something else. She has a sweet tooth, so he'll take her for dessert. Where, he doesn't know, but he's sure that she'll have a place in mind. But when he gets home, the house is dark. Asya isn't there. He thinks back to the morning, trying to remember if she told him that she was planning to visit with her younger sister. But all he can remember is eating his breakfast while typing with one hand and then rushing out the door. Did they even talk this morning? He can't remember. Asya is with her sister, and she sounds surprised, really surprised. He wants to tell her to just forget about it, but she insists that he pick her up and they go out. She's happy on the phone, apologizing for the extra trip he'll be taking, and asking what he's in the mood for. But his mood is soured, and he can't reclaim the anticipation that had filled him on the way home. They do go out, but something's off. She's trying to have a conversation with him, but he has to ask questions constantly. He doesn't know the latest news from her friends, had not even remembered that the younger sister had just the other week received a proposal that she wanted Asya's advice about. That was why they'd been together tonight. Asya has been heavily involved in the whole proposal process. He hasn't been involved in any of it. Asya carries the conversation all night. When she had tried to turn it on to him, he racked his brain and found nothing to talk about but work. And he knew that she didn't want to hear about that. She never wanted to hear about that. So instead, he sat there and let his wife tell him everything interesting that she could think of and reminded himself of the bigger picture. He needed to focus on the bigger picture. He didn't want to have to start again. He hated the thought of that risk. So no, they would stick to the plan. Work hard and get noticed and rise up in the ranks until his position was safe and he wouldn't be at any risk of getting fired ever. That was the way to success. And yes, it meant that he wouldn't be there to take care of his ailing parents in their home, but they could move. His parents could come and live with him and his wife in the same house if necessary even. That was the logical solution. Now, if only he could get everyone else to understand that and stop snapping at him that he was being cold. He wasn't. He was being shrewd and careful, and it would pay off in the end. He was sure of it. And that's the end of sketch two. This character has a family and friends who would love to spend time with him and make memories, but he's obsessed with making more money and climbing the ranks at work. This originally came from a good place, from wanting security, but it's become an obsession that rules him, and it means that he cannot find peace and contentment anymore. His eyes are constantly on the prize, but how much of a prize is it really? When he's finally amassed enough money, do you think that his friends and family will automatically move to accommodate him? Or will they have gotten used to the dynamic that he created? Will he then be the one begging for more time because he spent the prime of his life unwisely? Worse, will he become so consumed with what he doesn't have that he never stops to consider his loved ones until he feels their absence once they've left him? It's a difficult thing to consider, that you might be harming yourself and your loved ones by trying to provide for them. But the dissatisfaction that this man has with his life, with everything that he has accomplished, with the good job that all of his friends are apparently jealous about, it all means that he's frittering away his time working into the late night instead of spending any time with his wife, choosing to neglect his duties to his parents and tell them to move across the world to come and live with him rather than try to pay attention to them in their actual home and where they're comfortable. This protagonist has good intentions. Again, he wants security, but the way that he's chosen to try and attain that security is not sustainable, and it's going to leave him with few people standing by him in the end. He's already found that his wife and he have nothing to talk about. In the sketch, he had to turn the conversation back onto her because there was nothing on his mind except for work. And that kind of commitment, not commitment really, but obsession, is going to result in health problems, is going to result in a very not well-rounded personality, and is going to result in a lot of frustration if he gives everything that he has and doesn't get the reward that he wants. Also remember that this protagonist has no guarantee. He has no guarantee that he's going to be the one promoted, that he's going to get what he wants in the end. He has a lot. He has a good life. He has people who care about him. He has enough money to have his wife not be working at all. But instead of appreciating any of that, instead of appreciating the prime of his life, he's instead looking towards what everyone else has, what the people higher up in the ranks have that he so desperately wants. In the sketch, he says that his motivation is not wanting to be fired ever again. But is it really? How much could he have in savings by now? How far up is he going to climb? Is he going to take over the company by himself? Will he then be happy? But then when he takes over that company, there'll be another one, and it could go out of business as well. The goals of this protagonist are not sustainable, unfortunately, and therefore he's never going to find true happiness by continuing on as he is. He needs to find balance somehow, and to do that, he needs to stop ignoring what his friends and family think and stop focusing on his one obsession. All right, we're about to go for our first break for today's show. When we come back, we'll be discussing two more sketches and then doing a full analysis of all these four sketches. As we said earlier, our topic for today is dissatisfaction, and we're going to be looking at how discontentment and ingratitude can completely ruin a life. We hope that you'll join us again after this short break. Assalamu alaikum.
Love is behind all the greatest stories of our lives. And the greatest love of all is Allah's. The first 10 days of Dhul Hijjah are the days most loved by Allah. So give Qurbani in 30 countries worldwide. Give Qurbani. Give love with Islamic Relief.
You don't have to go to India to experience exotic spices. Come to Mars Spice. We select the best. We clean the best. You get the best. Ghana, Jiru, Garam Masala, Maschachas Mexican Manchurian Spices. Bring your daddy and your nanny to Mars Spice. Turn your cooking into a fine art. Come visit us at Mars Spice. 33 Concord Place, Benicia. 011-854-3256. Behind Jamia Masjid.
Is your Nissan due for a service?
Assalamu alaikum everyone and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. Today we've been discussing discontentment and dissatisfaction and we've just finished going through sketches 1 and 2. To recap, our first sketch was about a woman who had all the wrong priorities and was constantly concerned about other people and what they had, which seemed to be better than what she had. Very short sketch, but it had a ton of assumptions in it, and our protagonist assumed that the people who got to be out in the mornings while she was on her way to work were happier than she was, that her colleagues who came in late were more privileged than she was, and that really everyone around her was experiencing life in a much more happy way than she got to. And our protagonist for sketch one was just very, very unhappy with everything in her life. She had nothing that she was concentrating on being happy about, nothing that seemed to be worth it for her. She was just so very, very unhappy with everything, unfortunately. And that is what happens when you are dissatisfied. Of course, there are reasons to be unhappy that are actually valid, yes, but there's always something or the other good in your life. And if you can't think about what that is, if you can't remember it, then perhaps it's time to look at the way you're thinking and your lifestyle and make some changes. Our second sketch was called Stretch Thin. It first looked at the dangers of overworking and then looked at the general emotional state of our protagonist who kept trying to gain financial security, not even just financial security, but kept trying to rise in the ranks, was willing to work until after sundown and before sun up and neglect his parents, neglect his wife, neglect his friends, all just so that he could get right to the top. Let's recap what that protagonist had to say right at the end of the sketch. There we go. As our protagonist says, work hard and get noticed and rise up in the ranks until your position is safe and you won't be at any risk of getting fired. That is the way to success. And as the protagonist continued on, that meant that he wouldn't be there to take care of his parents in their home. But they could move. His parents could come up and live with him and his wife. That was the logical solution. And if only he could get everyone else to understand that and stop snapping at him that he was being cold. Because he wasn't being cold. He was being shrewd and careful, and it would pay off in the end. A very deluded protagonist for sketch two, unfortunately. Again, this character has a lot to be grateful for and a lot to be happy about. A family and friends who would love to spend time with him, and a job that apparently all of his friends are jealous of, but he's consumed by the idea that he doesn't have enough. Unfortunately, this could lead to him becoming so consumed that his family and friends choose to give up and no longer wait for him to pay attention to them. And will that be what our protagonist needs as his wake-up call? Or will he go past not paying attention to such an extent that even after he's left by his loved ones and by his friends, he continues to be consumed with earning more money? It's a very scary thought. All right, let's move on to sketch three. This sketch was originally used to discuss the ways that people so easily fall into debt and what the reasons are behind going into debt in the first place. Now, let's look at the protagonist's mental state and examine how her emotions affected her decision-making. Here we go. The truth is that it's her fault. She's tried for such a long time to blame other things for the situation that she's in, but she has to take the responsibility for it now. She can't keep lying to herself or to anyone else. She just wasn't as strong-willed as she could have been. She wanted to fit in. She wanted to be something other than the poor little poor girl who spent her day serving the rich. She wanted to be somebody, and she thought she could fake it till she made it. But all she'd done was ruin herself trying to get people who didn't care about her to deem her worthy to spend time with. If she could just go back and yell at her younger self, tell that naive girl that no matter how much money she threw away, she couldn't buy acceptability, maybe then she could change it all and turn out better. But life didn't work that way. There was no time machine that she could jump into in order to fix her past mistakes. God, it sounded so idiotic and so immature when she said it plainly like that. She had beggared herself because she wanted to be liked by the rich kids. Out of all the things she could have spent her loan money on, including her actual tuition, which was what it was for in the first place, she'd gone for unnecessarily expensive clothes and unnecessarily expensive experiences, and she'd just never been able to recover from that string of colossally stupid decisions. All those rich kids she was trying to make like her, they had gone on with their lives after she'd been forced to drop out. And while admittedly they weren't cruel to her, and they did try to honor their promises to keep in touch after she had been forced to leave, she'd been too full of pain and resentment and shame to put any effort into keeping those relationships going. So it was all for nothing in the end. She'd been forced to move back in with her parents and own up to her foolishness, and she still hurt when she thought about it. Thank God she had only gotten half a year's worth of tuition money released to her. Or who knew what nonsense she would have gotten up to. She'd been very careful and disciplined then, under her parents' roof. She'd gotten a job and had given a whole 65% of her paycheck to loan repayments, and she'd given the rest to contributing to her living expenses. She'd worked and lived like a hermit for 3 long years, and she'd repaid everything she owned. And at the end of it all, she'd still been a cashier at a supermarket with no hope of getting promoted because she had a measly 1 semester of university under her belt. And even though she only had the 1 semester under her belt, she'd had to pay for both. She had only even attended half of the second semester before being evicted for not paying her fees. She'd never even gotten to finish out the year and salvage those credits, and she'd still had to work to pay off all that money. It was horrible. And she'd been angry. She'd been 21 years old, and she'd been angry that instead of graduating with a degree that would allow her to jump past the grant work stage, like everyone else, she'd started university with all those privileged little brats. Instead of that, she was still living with her parents and still wearing the same clothes that she'd bought when she was 18 years old. And so she'd gone a little insane and had taken advantage of the fact that her loans were technically not on her own credit record. She'd filled out an application for a credit card with a stupidly high interest rate and an irresponsibly high limit, and she'd gone on a shopping spree that let her max it out. She'd been incredibly short-sighted, and it had felt amazing. It had been the first bit of pleasure she'd had in 3 whole years. The first bit of pleasure and the experience that had allowed her to replace old and fraying clothing and get shoes that didn't have cheap or worn replacement insoles and nothing else keeping her from feeling the ground beneath her feet. She'd even gotten herself a new cell phone to replace the cracked and worn thing that she'd had that was so outdated it didn't even get its software updated anymore. Of course, her short-sightedness had been punished by the first bill that came in the mail, and the second time her parents hadn't been inclined to be sympathetic. She was racking up 15% in interest fees every single month she had the card, not to mention the bank charges that had been added on as well. And then there were the actual repayments to contend with. Her salary wouldn't stretch to timelessly paying all that off, and taking part in part-time studies like they had all been hoping she would, unless her parents helped her out, which they'd made clear they weren't willing to do anymore. She had to grow up sometime, and to them, it was the perfect time to teach her the consequences of her actions. They'd asked her to pay a minimal rent fee, and she'd been furious about it, deciding instead that if she was going to be paying to live somewhere, it would be better to just go and live somewhere else where she wasn't being treated like a child. She's still paying that shopping fee back now. 2 years since she went on it, and 9 months into moving back with her parents. And she's just now managed to be making the minimum payments, and it's going to be an awful year and a half at least before she gets that all paid up. She owes her parents a ton of money for all the many times that they've bailed her out, and for the junky old car that they gave to her when her mother stopped being able to comfortably use it. And though it's stupid, she owes money to a couple of stores as well. Clothing stores, and she needed clothing, so it wasn't really, it was a necessity. She has never let those accounts last for longer than 2 months, but she's never closed them. She doesn't think she could bear to. She's 24 years old, and she's had debt collectors after her 4 times already. She sold clothing and jewelry that was handed down to her by her grandmothers, and she seriously contemplated just running away and trying to start over. She had never gotten far with those plans. She has no skills, no qualities that would make her hireable, and she still has no higher education. She has been trying to get her degree. She's not a complete trash can of a disaster. But she's still in debt, and every month she gets a little further into it when she can't pay her parents back what they loan her. The guilt of it all still hasn't stopped, though she ignores it as often as she can. Just like she ignores the mess that her life has turned into. If she just pretends that everything is fine for long enough, it'll all turn out okay, right? Maybe she can just keep going like she is for the next 3 years while she gets her degree. And then when she's done, she'll get an amazing job and be able to pay her parents back everything that she owes them with her very first paycheck. That would require her to be earning 10 times as much money as she is right now. Which, if you want to be logical about it, is ridiculous. But it's a fun daydream for her on the days that she's been being yelled at by customers who hate that she won't let them use expired coupons, and who hate that she checks their large bills for certain things counterfeited. Of everything in her life, the one pleasure that she hasn't had to give up has been daydreaming. She indulges in it often now. Existing in the real world feels strange and uncomfortable because of how much she indulges in it. As often as she can, she ducks out. Or she goes to her phone and looks at what everyone else has, and makes plans for the days when she will have all of it at her fingertips. Right now, though, she's in front of a debt counselor who's trying to help her come up with strategies to fix her mess of a life. And she can't check out. And she might be a little resentful towards the counselor. She can't help it. The other woman is maybe 2 years older than she is. And there's judgment written all over that pretty, well-made-up, expensive face. And she's mad at the counselor. She looks at the woman's handbag and her clothing and her prim and proper way that she sits. And she's angry. And she's jealous. And she wants to be her. She wants to tell this counselor where to get off. But she's promised to give this woman a fair hearing. And it would be especially spoilt and childish to go back on her word and not sit through the whole session. Though she knows that she's probably not going to get much out of it. The solution to her problem is something that she's known ever since the beginning. Go cold turkey and don't spend any money at all. As though that's worth it. She sits quietly and listens, even as the woman talks to her about her frivolous spending habit and tries to explain why she's been buying the amazingly good groceries and spending money on clothes when she doesn't strictly need to because she has a work uniform and they're not necessary. It's difficult to explain, and she ends up sitting there in silence as she tries to come up with a reason other than, I don't want to look ugly, because at the end of the day, that's what it is. She doesn't want to look ugly, and she doesn't want to hide away at home because she doesn't have good enough clothing to go outside in. But by the looks of a pretty rich Miss Counselor, telling the truth isn't going to gain her any sympathy. It's instead going to have Miss Counselor try to judge her while being oh so polite and talking about the need to prioritize. She's done the calculations. She's not stupid. And an extra few hundred a month are not going to make a miraculous change. It's a little less time paying off debt. And she's going to be spending those few months paying off debt. She's chosen to just risk it a little bit and be a little reckless with money. It's not that terrible in the grand scheme of things. Yes, it means making her parents wait a few months longer to get paid back, sure, but she wants to think they'll understand, and she deserves it anyway. Her life is so terrible that she has to find happiness wherever she can. And if that's in buying things, then that's just the way that it is, and everybody just has to wait a little longer for her to pay back all of this debt. It's stupid. It's spoiled, and it's selfish, and it's childish, and she doesn't care anymore. She's not going to keep trying. That's it. And that's the end of our third sketch. This protagonist felt out of place and unhappy, and as she even admits, wanted to fit in with all of the rich kids. It seemed like every other person was happier and richer and better than she was, and it was very difficult for her to accept that. So difficult, in fact, that she chose to go into debt to even the playing field. This woman slips and falls into debt very often. She buys all the nice things that she wants, and it doesn't help, really. She's still not happy. Arguably, that's because of the stress of having to pay everything back, but still, surely if she wanted these things so badly, and if they were going to make a difference to her life, she'd have been more willing to work for them. Then the debt and the sacrifices that she's making after the fact would be worth it, wouldn't they? But they aren't. Because as cliche as a thing it is to say, things cannot buy you happiness. Not the kind of happiness that's lasting and worthwhile. Think of the most expensive things you own. Why do you appreciate them? Because of the memories attached, because of the people who gave them to you, or because of the pleasure that you felt in earning them? Those three of the most common answers. The things themselves, they can please you when you use them, but not much more. They're just things at the end of the day. They're going to degrade, and they're going to get old, and they're going to break eventually, probably. Today's topic was quite a scary one. Dissatisfaction and ingratitude are things that we should all be worried about. And as we said before, it is very easy to get into the wrong mindset and spend your days looking at what you lack instead of what you have. Looking at what you don't have, it can be a motivator at times. But the trouble is that you'll never have it all in this dunya. There's a reason that we're taught to lower our gaze from temptation. Coveting that which other people have is never going to end well. It leads to questioning our last plans, and it very often ruins your day, as you mentioned earlier. So we should be grateful, for we have so much to be grateful for. And we have to do more than just say it. It is very easy for us to just say the words, because gratitude in the abstract is difficult. It's quick and easy to say, Alhamdulillah, for everything that I have. But that kind of gratitude is fleeting. Alhamdulillah for everything you have. Okay, great. But do you even know what that is? What are you thinking of when you say that? It is when we're almost careless about gratitude that discontentment begins to spread. I personally like to try and find a new thing to be grateful for once a day. And that's inspired by the gratitude challenges that are so readily and easily available online. That's led to me picking anything from earplugs to books to water to the pretty clouds to be grateful for. And all of those things are worth gratitude because they all bring happiness, well, not happiness really, but pleasure. They all bring something useful. They hope. Now, unhappiness and moments of discontent are normal and nothing to obsess over. But when you find yourself struggling to list the good in your life, if you're standing there trying to think of everything good that's happened for you and you can't really think of anything, then perhaps it's time to change your mindset. After all, no one wants to end up like the three very unfortunate protagonists in today's sketches. Just to recap them, we had our first protagonist, who was a woman who was very preoccupied with what everyone else seemed to have and very unhappy about the fact that it seemed unfair for her to be starting work so early when other people got started late, when other people didn't have to work at all. This woman had a career and had her own car, had a means of transportation, had a good job really, but still couldn't think of anything to be happy about throughout the entire sketch. In our second sketch, we had a man who was fairly obsessed with the idea that he needed to get to the top. And our first sketch also shared that same thing, having to get to the top, having to be right up there as number one, because otherwise you can't be happy. But remember, number one is not always the best. Yes, you might be right up at the top, the CEO of a company. That doesn't mean that you don't have stress. That doesn't mean that you don't have difficulty. That doesn't mean that you're free from illness, even. If you're discontented with your position in life and you're looking for something else, you're looking for something to change to make you happier, you're probably going to end up disappointed. Because a change in circumstances can't make you happier all by itself. It can help if you're in a horrible circumstance, if you're in abject poverty or in a war zone or in a place where you feel as though you're in danger. But by and large, one thing changing is not going to change everything for you. Change needs to happen internally to make us more grateful and to make us count our blessings. As I said, it's so quick and easy to say, alhamdulillah, for everything that I have. But to be truly grateful, we need to focus and think of exactly what it is we have so that we appreciate it properly. Otherwise, we can forget that we have these things. So, perhaps try a gratitude challenge, or perhaps just when you are taking the time to be grateful, think carefully about what you're saying. Don't just say, alhamdulillah, for everything. Think of what everything means. Again, like we said earlier, unhappiness and moments of discontentment should not be something to obsess over. Don't think that you're going to be doomed if you're unhappy sometimes, and if sometimes it feels like things are unfair. That's normal. Those feelings are normal. Those feelings happen to everyone. It's just when you cannot stop yourself from going into that mindset of everyone has more than I do, that it might be time to change things. And that's all we have time for today. We will be back next Friday, inshallah, with a new sketch or sketches and commentary, and we hope that you'll join us then. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you're welcome to get in touch with me, Niamat Rawabi, at theimperfectmuslimablog@gmail.com. or under the handles The Imperfect Muslima or Niamat Rawabi on all forms of social media. We hope that you have a lovely day further. Assalamu alaikum.